Planet Money helps you understand the economy. We find the people at the center of the story.
Garbage in New York, that was like a controlled substance.
We show you how money influences everything.
Tell me what you like by telling me how you spend your money.
And we dig until we get answers.
I had a bad feeling you're going to bring that up.
Planet Money finds out. All you have to do is listen. The Planet Money podcast from NPR.
From KQED.
Hey, everyone. I'm Katrina Schwartz, and you're listening to Bay Curious, the podcast that answers listener questions about the Bay Area. Today's question comes from listener Scott Brenner in San Francisco. He grew up around here and knows a lot of the local establishments.
There are a few restaurants that I know my parents have been to since before I was born. And of course, that's a long time for me, but I know that there's much more history in this area. So it's got me wondering, what are the oldest businesses in the Bay Area?
It turns out there are a lot of businesses that have been doing their thing for a really long time. There's a car dealership in San Jose, Normandin's, that started out selling horses and buggies in 1875. And KCBS is understood to be one of the oldest radio stations in the world, getting its start around 1909.
I did have a couple guesses.
Scott considered Ghirardelli Chocolates, It's ice cream sandwiches, but then he settled on one.
And what I'm imagining is like Levi Strauss, like the apparel company would probably be number one.
Levi Strauss of Blue Jean fame is, in fact, one of the oldest businesses in the Bay Area. So today on the show, we're going to learn more about those blue jeans and Levi's, and then we'll grab a bite at the oldest restaurant in California. Stay with us.
Support for Bay Curious is brought to you by Sierra Nevada Brewing Company. Still family-owned, operated, and argued over. Explore their brews wherever fine beverages are sold, and taste how trailblazing runs in the family. Visit sierranevada.com to find your new favorite beer today.
Today, we're visiting two of the Bay Area's oldest businesses. To start us off, reporter Catherine Monahan took us to where they both began, in downtown San Francisco.
Levi Strauss World Headquarters takes up a whole city block at the foot of Telegraph Hill. There's a landscape plaza out front where dozens of employees are getting lunch from food trucks and chatting by giant water fountains. These days, Levi's is a massive enterprise operating in over 120 countries, but it started much more humbly.
Levi Strauss & Company was born on the foundations of the gold rush.
Tracy Panik is Levi's historian and director of archives, and she means that literally.
When I come to work, I literally am walking over the remains of a gold rush era ship.
Yeah, we're standing on top of it right now. In fact, much of San Francisco's financial district is built on landfill that includes old ships, abandoned when their sailors ran east to look for gold.
From 1849 up until the mid-1850s, there were thousands of people coming in, and there were hundreds of ships that were coming in.
On one of them was a young Bavarian man called Levi Strauss. He came in 1852 or 53 to open a branch of his family's dry goods business, which was already operating in New York. He got a warehouse here in San Francisco and started selling supplies, including canvas, bedding materials, and an especially sturdy cotton fabric called denim. And business went well. Even after the gold rush tapered off, there was still plenty of demand.
There's lots of men who are doing tough outdoor work.
And in the early 1870s, Strauss started making a new product, one that would make his fortune. It started with a letter from a customer, a tailor in Reno called Jacob Davis.
He also tells Levi about an unusual idea he had for making tough work pants. And it comes down to, here we go, because I have some of these, a little tiny piece of metal.
Davis had started putting copper rivets onto the stress points on work pants, just like you still see on your jeans pockets today. He told Levi Strauss the pants were selling like hotcakes, and he couldn't keep up. He wanted a business partner.
So Levi and the company agrees, and on May 20th, 1873, they receive a U.S. patent for an improvement in fastening pocket openings. We refer to it here at Levi Strauss as the birth of the modern blue jean, or 501, as it would be called.
For a closer look, Tracy takes me up to the top floor and into the Levi's archives room.
And I notice you put on your white gloves just now.
I did put on my white gloves. Most of the collection in the archives is garments. And we handle them in a way that's going to make them last for another 150 plus years.
It's a climate-controlled room, and hanging from the walls are bits of history. Albert Einstein's jean jacket from the 1930s. A fluffy suede coat from when Levi's outfitted the U.S. Olympic team.
The important things we keep in a fireproof safe, which I'm happy to show you if you kind of...
Yeah, let's check it out.
Yeah. All right, so... I'm going to pull out the very earliest.
Carefully, Tracy carries a bundle over to a table and unwraps the oldest known pair of jeans in the world.
Whoa. This pair has been through the ringer. This one has lost a lot of the blue indigo that makes them the blue jeans that we know of. There's lots of speckles and dirt.
These are from 1873 or 74. They're a mottled grayish brown, and the crotch is completely worn through. Most of the metal is gone. What's left of the denim has been stitched to an inner layer to stabilize it.
We worked with a conservator, creating kind of an inner ghost pair of blue jeans to then sew all of the parts that may have been just hanging.
I'm just thinking how meticulous. Like, it's making me think of archaeologists who recreate the face of a Neanderthal woman or something like that.
It was stitch by stitch, and look at them, the stitches. It was difficult to put the needle through because the denim was still really tough.
The original Levi's were serious work pants, basically personal protective gear to be worn on top of your other clothes. They had buttons for suspenders and a buckle on the back so that the size was adjustable.
You could get a large pair, especially if you were like a mining company, and you would just get several sizes, kind of big, and then more than one worker could wear them.
The 501 waist overalls, as they were called, were a hit. By 1879, they were selling for $1.46 a pair. Levi's opened a factory and made jeans here in San Francisco for well over a century. And the demand kept growing. One old advertisement quotes the 1926 world champion rodeo rider, Lawton Champy.
I've worn Levi Strauss overalls ever since a small boy. I'm over 23 years old. The Levi Strauss are the only clothes that will really stand the hard, rough brushwork of a cowboy on the range. And they are also neat to wear.
In World War II, the U.S. government declared jeans an essential commodity, available only to defense workers. Soldiers wore them while serving overseas, which helped introduce them to Europe and Japan. In the 50s, Marlon Brando wore them with his leather jacket and his motorcycle when he played Johnny in The Wild One.
Hey, Johnny, what are you rebelling against?
What do you got?
Jeans became the official uniform of cool. By the 1970s, everybody was wearing them.
Now, Jefferson Airplane.
The company is still going strong and still based in San Francisco, though these days the jeans are made mostly overseas.
What has made Levi's carry on for so long?
So I showed you the very oldest pair of blue jeans that we have in the collection dating to 1870s. They don't look a lot different to the Levi's that we wear today.
So you think it's really kind of about the jeans themselves?
I think it's about the jeans themselves.
Levi Strauss capitalized on one of the main needs for people coming to San Francisco in its early years: clothing and supplies. Now, let's go a few blocks down the street to a business that addressed an even more fundamental need: food. And this business is even older.
As a matter of fact, is it older than California state itself?
Jose Maximilian Paredes is a bartender at Tadich Grill in San Francisco's financial district.
because California became union in 1850. So Titus Grills, it was a year before.
So what you're saying is this restaurant is older than the state of California?
It is.
Damn.
No.
He's worked here for 25 years, and he's showing me around the place before it opens for the day. It's classy, but comfortable. It feels a little like someplace out of The Godfather, with dark wood-paneled walls and white linen tablecloths. Along one wall are private booths with wooden dividers.
It's like a little small room. It's just a small room, and you and your guests, you know, nobody bother you.
Tottage Grill got its start in 1849 in a tent on an almost mile-long wharf jutting out from San Francisco's main harbor, where three Croatian immigrants served food and coffee to merchants and sailors. Their names were Nikola Budrovic, Frano Costa, and Antonio Gasparic, and they called their little spot Coffee Stand. Over the next 175 years, the restaurant passed through just a handful of Croatian owners, including one John Tadic, who renamed it after himself in 1912. Since 1928, it's been in the Bujic family. It has never closed, and while it's moved around a little bit, it's still in the same neighborhood. And once again, getting ready to open for lunch.
This is our kitchen. This is our chef, Jeff Rodriguez.
Hello. How you doing?
Our kitchen based on three cooks. It's serving 400 customers a day.
Before COVID, he says it was more like 700.
For three people, that's impressive. So you have the broiler on the side here. This is a charcoal wood mesquite.
Tadic Grill cooks fish over wood coals in the Croatian style. Seafood has always been a specialty here. It was a working class food in San Francisco's early days. Cracked crab was on the menu in 1916 for 35 cents.
Really good food, I'll tell you.
What's your favorite?
Cipino. Have you ever had cipino before?
No.
Cipino is like a seafood stew, like a bouillabaisse. It's like clams, mussels, prawns, shrimp.
Jose says he would eat it every day if he could. And he's clearly not the only one who appreciates the food. Over the years, many famous people have dined here.
This is our guest book. It's not everybody had the pleasure to see it.
He sets a well-worn book with yellowed pages onto the table.
Go ahead, just go little by little.
There's page after page of loopy signatures, sometimes with little comments about the food or the hospitality.
Jack Nicholson.
Yep.
Johnny Carson, Linda Ronstadt.
Yep. They all were here.
Cary Grant. Yeah. Doris Day.
Matt Groening, the creator of The Simpsons, drew a cartoon of Homer Simpson saying, Tadic Grill. It turns out a lot of San Francisco's mayors have been regulars. Willie Brown said when he really wanted to show people the flavor of San Francisco, he would bring them here. Several Kennedys have dined here, and George and Barbara Bush.
Oh my God, Huey Lewis.
Oh, I remember I waited on Huey Lewis. Even I do have pictures with him. He was sitting right there in that corner right there.
David Bowie?
Yeah.
What fun. What a fun place to work.
It is. I remember when I started working here and I said, you know what, I'm just going to stick around for a few years. I'm going to make a few dollars and I'm going to move on. But then for some reason, I start liking it, loving it, with passion. You know, when you engage with customers and then you laugh and you smile and then you talk to them like you know them for 100 years.
And now the grandfather clock shows it's almost 11 a.m., opening time. Customers are starting to line up outside. Jose turns on the light for the neon Tadic Grill sign out front.
Here we go. Oi! Are you all ready?
Yeah.
There we go. Get ready. We'll find out.
As he opens the doors, families and groups of colleagues step inside. One guy comes in, sits at the bar, and starts folding silverware into napkins. He doesn't work here, though. He just feels really comfortable.
What you doing?
I'm helping out like I usually do.
His name is Matt Ritchie. He likes to get some lunch or a drink and shoot the breeze with the staff. But when he first came in here, almost 30 years ago, it was to work.
When I moved here from New York, the guy that I worked for did maintenance, okay, at night. And I used to come here and actually clean the kitchen.
That didn't really pay enough for him to be able to dine here. But then...
I started working in finance. And then when I could afford to eat lunch every once in a while, that's what I did.
So first you were cleaning the kitchen at night, and then next thing you knew, you were like in a suit and tie that having a nice white wine.
Yep. The martini's my choice, though.
How's the martini here?
Oh, it's the best.
Now he's here two or three times a week. Matt says overall, it's the consistency of the place that he loves, that in all these years, it hasn't really changed.
You know, it's like a treat for a lot of people to come here. It's that old school goodness that, you know, that people love.
I asked our question asker, Scott Brenner, to stop by for a bite and shared all that I found with him, like how this place has been in business since before California was a state.
That's really quite impressive. I had no idea.
We ordered the Cioppino, as Jose recommended, a San Francisco dish that's almost as old as the restaurant itself. The waiter brings us bibs so we don't get it all over our clothes.
I have to say, I'm normally not the biggest seafood person, but at a place like this, it works for sure.
It's warm and garlicky and fun to imagine diners enjoying this same dish some 150 years ago. Maybe even while wearing a pair of Levi's.
That was reporter Catherine Monahan. Thanks to Scott Brenner for asking today's question, which actually won a Bay Curious voting round. We've got three new questions for you to vote on in May.
There's a placard in Alviso describing how in 1890, P.H. Wheeler wanted to turn the salt marsh into a development called New Chicago, but that fortune's tide turned against him. Who was P.H. Wheeler and what happened?
What is the longest stairway in San Francisco? What is the shortest? What is the steepest?
Who funds those positive billboards in Oakland along 880? They went up right after the election, and they say things like, yesterday's tomorrow is here today, or what if that thing were a good thing? They're positive.
Head on over to kqed.org/baycurious to cast your vote. And if you've been wondering about some aspect of life in the Bay Area, you can submit your question there too.
Bay Curious is made in San Francisco at member-supported KQED.
Our show is produced by
Gabriella Glick,
Christopher Beal,
and me, Katrina Schwartz, with extra support from
Alana Walker,
Maha Sinod,
Katie Springer,
Jen Chien,
Holly Kernan,
and everyone on Team KQED. Some members of the KQED podcast team are represented by the Screen Actors Guild, American Federation of Television and Radio Artists, San Francisco, Northern California local. See you next week.
Hi, Bay Curious listeners. It's trivia time. Congratulations to our March winner, David from San Martin. Now, here was the question and answer for April. In what Bay Area city was the world's first radio broadcast station established in 1909? The answer is San Jose. All right. Are you ready to play May's trivia game? Here's this month's trivia question. From 1906 until Prohibition in 1919, Richmond, California was home to the largest winery in the world, producing up to 12 million gallons of wine a year. What was the name of this winery? If you know the answer, submit your guess at baycurious.org or click the link in the episode description. Anyone who guesses it right will be entered to win our prize package with Bay Curious and Sierra Nevada goodies. Our trivia quiz is made possible by Sierra Nevada Brewing Company. Good luck.